Good evening, and welcome to Midnight Audio Theater, a weekly program bringing you new and original audio dramas, be they adventure, mystery, sci-fi, or comedy. I'm your host, Kathy Ranella. Tonight, we're taking a short intermission from Byron and Twin Stars to take a look at some new audio dramas released this year, which will hopefully interest you in learning more. If you are a regular listener of the show, you've probably noticed that I like to lead every night off with an entertaining short. And tonight is no exception. Straight from the Sons of Ford themselves, I am pleased to share with you the first two episodes of Harrison Quest.
Hello?
Simon, get up. Emergency meeting.
Horace, what time is it?
Emergency meeting! Emergency meeting!
Simon, you're 2 hours late.
I'm 20 minutes late, but let's go.
I said emergency meeting. Was I not clear? Was I not crystal clear in the fact that I needed you here immediately?
You were crystal clear, and now I'm here. And I think we should.
Oh, now you're calling the shots, huh? You show up late, and then this is how you respond.
I'm not calling the shots, but you sense you.
You know, because Brent and Eddie, they had no problem getting here on time. I called them up, and they were here way before you were.
Brent and Eddie live here.
It doesn't make any sense. How important this meeting is. No, you're not going to get in. You got to do something for me first. I don't like where this club's going.
What do you want me to do?
I think the situation calls for a little. I don't know. Harrison haiku.
575 or 712 7.
575.
Okay.
And make it good this time.
Rockets.
You need a little help there? Or
no,
what's going on, huh?
No. His lip.
Okay. You used to knock these out of the park. You're struggling. You're showing up late. You're a disaster.
Okay. As the aliens descended, the president wiped his brow. Well, gentlemen, it's up to Harrison now.
Yeah, aside from the syllable count, good job.
Anything.
Of course it means something. It's right there on the receipt.
Fellas, what is up? What is the big emergency?
Okay, so you know how we buy a bag of Harrison Ford's trash every month from that guy on eBay?
Yeah.
Wait, you mean you found a sample of some of his...
No, I don't think he uses condoms.
He does. It said so in the tweet.
Guys, shut up! No, we didn't get a sample, but Brent, tell him about what we found.
This month in the bag, there was a voided check made out to a A. Zawaki.
His allergist?
No, that's Polaki. We didn't know who this Zawaki was, so we looked it up. Andrew Zawaki is the facilities manager at the Cryonics Institute in Clinton, Michigan.
Cryonics? Like freezing?
Not just any freezing. CTI is the world's largest human cryostat laboratory.
Are you trying to say...
Harrison Ford is preparing to cryogenically freeze himself.
That's retarded.
Shut up, Eddie. This is serious.
Why would he want to freeze himself?
It makes
he's done so
sense.
Many movies I mean, that take place in the future. He wants
totally
to see what it's really
staff.
Like.
He is Harrison Ford.
Doesn't the present suck? Don't you hate your life?
No.
Yes, you do, Brent. Life totally sucks. It's the worst thing ever. And Harrison knows that.
Or he could be dying. Maybe he has a disease that there's no cure for yet and he wants to freeze himself until they discover it.
You guys are crazy.
Shut up, Eddie. You're crazy. Do you not realize what this means? We have to act now.
Whoa. Hold on. What are you saying?
No, we are not ready. We're only on the third draft. We need more time.
We don't have more time, Simon. Mr. Ford is 66 years, 3 months, 17 days, and... What time is it?
9:34.
8 hours old, and he's about to freeze himself. And if we don't get him our script, then one of America's most iconic and inspirational protagonists will go down empty-handed.
He's right, Simon. Need to get him our script. Need to get him that Oscar.
It's a Harrison quest, it's a Harrison quest, it's a quest for Harrison. Will the Sons of Ford find him in time? 'Cause when they went through his trash, they found receipts in his stash, and they learn he's gonna freeze himself. Now they gotta get him their script before he's gone. It's a Harrison quest, it's a quest for Harrison.
Previously on Harrison Quest.
Emergency meeting! Emergency meeting!
Harrison Ford is preparing to cryogenically freeze himself.
We have to act now.
Need to get him our script. Need to get him that Oscar.
And if there's a way, come on. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We're gonna find us a way.
Interior Vatican, night. Pope Julius II looks as Cardinal Antony hurriedly makes his way down the hall of the Papal Palace, his clergyman robe sweeping behind him.
Your Holiness, I've just come from the barracks of the Papal Gendarmes.
Cardinal Antony, your distress is concerning.
Horace, what are you doing?
I'm reading the Harrison part.
No, I'm reading the Harrison part. You're reading for Bishop...
Fuck the Bishop Cantrell! I want to read for Harrison!
Horace, Eddie always reads for Harrison. You know that. He's got the most experience.
I've studied his performance.
Dude, you were an extra on Hollywood Homicide for one day. You milked that every week.
I had a speaking role, Horace. That makes me a day player.
I'll get it.
That's it. Read off. Right now.
Hello?
I'd like an application.
Application?
Yeah, for the Harrison Ford Group. Is this the Sons of Ford?
It is, yes. Hold on a second.
Okay, next one. I didn't kill my wife.
I didn't kill my wife.
Okay, 1 point for Eddie. Next one. How dare you, Mr. President?
How dare you, Mr. President?
That one goes to Horace. All right. Who are you calling scruffy looking?
Who are you calling?
Guy at the door asking for an application.
Well, give him the test.
Here you go.
This is the application?
Yeah, it's a take-home test. Bring it back tomorrow by 2:16.
Okay, thank you. I'll be back.
Hey, by the way, how did you hear about us?
I read your mission statement on the website.
Ah, okay, thanks.
Hear that? The website. I told you it worked.
I know, right? I think my favorite part in Temple of Doom is when Data, the little Asian slave, is in the minecart and he's just screaming, Dr. Jones! Dr. Jones! And Indy just throws him from one cart into the other while fighting the Arabian sword guy.
Yeah. Actually, though, his name's Shorty, not Data. That's from Goonies. And he's an orphan, not a slave. And when Indiana picks him up, he doesn't use his left hand like you just did, but rather his right for better leverage as he's fighting Mola Ram in the next cart.
Oh, wow, I forgot you were such a big fan. You probably think I'm really stupid right now, don't you?
Well, I'm gonna get some popcorn. Do you want anything?
No, I'm good, thanks.
All right. Moron.
Favorite color, power animal. What was Harrison Ford's 1982 New Year's resolution?
Hey, Jolie. Fresh laundry. What you working on there?
Nothing, Mom. Hey, you wouldn't happen to know Harrison Ford's middle name, would you?
It's a trick question. He actually doesn't have a middle name.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Didn't know you were a Ford fan. Anything else I can help with?
Probably not. Most of these are impossible. Shoe size, allergies, blood type.
Be positive.
How could you possibly know that?
I think I saw it on an interview.
How about scars and their origin stories?
It's a Harrison Quest. It's a quest for Harrison.
Harrison, where are you?
Sons of Ford, where y'all at? It's your boy Mason Page, transmitting to you from California. You know how we do it out here. Look, if I can help y'all find your boy, let me know something. Call me up to the 916, y'all, and we can do this. But for now, check it out.
Once upon a time, going through the trash, Simon, Horace, Brent, and Eddie came upon a cache of information so highly confidential that Eddie got a Woody and the others went demential. They couldn't believe the odds. Everyone was floored. The secret they uncovered was about Harrison Ford. The guy who played Solo wasn't good in health, and now he was about to go and icy freeze himself. We can't let it happen. The
boys, they exclaim. We got a script so magic it could blow out David Blaine. Harrison must have it before he goes on ice. We gotta get it to him if it costs us all our lives. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We'll find Harrison if there's a way. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We'll find Harrison if there's a way. We don't really know where the road is leading. All we wanna do is get a single reading. Chances are he'll love it, laugh until he cries. Tell us all the parts that we should go back and revise. Make us all his partners, take us to his pad. Maybe we can meet his peeps and even mom and dad. You may think we're kidding, but that is your mistake. Cause we are deadly serious, just like a rattlesnake. Chicks will never get us, they'll never understand what it's like to stalk the most amazing leading man. Chicks will never get us, they'll never understand what it's like to stalk the most amazing leading man. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We'll find Harrison if there's a way. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We'll find Harrison if there's a way.
You know what? This is going out to my homeboys, the sons of Ford. Here's to catching the Harrison before the big freeze. Keep it up, y'all. One, two, one, two. Let me hear y'all. Come on, come on, come on. One, two, one, two. Let me hear y'all.
Simon's in the house. Everybody say Prince in the house. Everybody say Eddie's in the house. Everybody say Horace is in the house. Come on, y'all.
We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We'll find Harrison if there's a way. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We'll find Harrison if there's a way. We are the sons of Ford. We have a script that can't be ignored. We don't care what you say. We're gonna find us a way.
That was Harrison Quest. Episodes 1 and 2 brought to you by the Sons of Ford. For more episodes and info, visit harrisonquest.com. As a side note, Harrison Quest is running in the entertainment category of the annual Podcast Awards. If you liked this show and other podcasts, show your support at podcastawards.com. Next, gather around to hear the Bard's Tale at Longtail Tavern, the first episode of a medieval fantasy adventure called The Soul Drinker.
Something's amiss here at the Longtail Tavern. Oh, I know what it is. Where's Spagan? Hey, old Bard, how about a story?
Old Bard? If I were 30 years younger, I'd put an arrow in your gizzard for that insolence.
If you were 30 years younger, I wouldn't have called you old.
Touché. Well done, my friend. A story it is, then. There are those who believe that all of the events of our time happened simply by chance or by a handful of mere coincidences. Nonsense. There are powers in this world, both divine and arcane, influenced by the actions of humans, demi-humans, gods, and the like, which shape our present and future for good or for woe. One such event happened over 50 years ago, and it began in this very town, the seat of the Kingdom of Rigaldale, crown jewel of the Tri-Mountain Empire. On this dark day, an evil most unspeakable fell upon the land. It was instigated by one known as the Soul Drinker. And how do I know the veracity of this story? Well, because I was there. Regal in those days was true to its name. It was a fortress like no other, save for the Imperial Palace. It was situated on a hill to the north of the town that it protected, surrounded by imposing stone walls with archers stationed at several strategically placed towers. Royal guardsmen flooded the kingdom, imposing the king's laws, yet earning the respect of his subjects through his benevolent rule. King Dive held court in his splendid throne room, decorated with marble and gold. Around his throne was an elf, Tegina. She was his battle mage and personal protector. And Angar, the bishop of the Church of Bompador, our kingdom's divine patron and the god of wisdom and foresight. I, of course, was off to the side trying to impress a few of the more lovely young maidens. The interest of the court piqued, however, once they became aware of a new arrival. A powerfully built man with the finest chainmail armor in the land, and strapped to his back, a broadsword made of silver. He wore an amulet around his neck, which sparkled in the golden hall. The room became deathly silent as the herald then announced the arrival of the fiercest and most respected warrior in the kingdom.
His Majesty, may I present to you Hasgill, Captain of the Royal Guard, answering your summons.
My liege?
Rise, Captain, for I have grave news for us all. The Emperor has seen fit to recall all of his troops from our borders and has ordered all of our royal reserves to muster within the Imperial province, leaving our military depleted.
This is an outrage. Why would he do such a thing?
Captain, please refrain from raising your voice in the presence of the king.
My apologies to the court.
It's all right. I understand. I reacted in the same manner when I heard the news myself. His actions, however, are quite warranted.
Captain, over the last month there have been confirmed reports of attacks by undead creatures in virtually every town throughout the southeast marches of the Empire. To make matters worse, a fortnight ago, King Oldman disappeared from his castle in Jollyford.
He just vanished from the bedchamber.
Sire?
Ah, yes. Hasgill, I have complete faith that you will remain vigilant in the days ahead. From now on, only a routine garrison will remain in the castle. All available guards will be stationed at the main gate and within the city for as long as this crisis continues.
But sire, this will not afford you the appropriate protection.
I have taken steps to ensure my protection, while also seeing to the safety of my subjects.
But...
Allay your fears, Captain, for the responsibility of the king's safety is now in the hands of me and the priests of Bompador.
With all due respect to you and the priests, I do not feel satisfied that the king will be secure only with more soldiers.
Sacrilege! Blasphemy! You dare to question the power and the glory and the very competence of Bompador? You shall repaint or suffer the...
Angar, please be silent. Allow me to handle this matter myself.
So be it, my lady. But I will endure no more insults to he who is Bompador.
Fine. Captain, the throne room is now under the protection of a powerful magical union. With the cooperation of the priests, we have conspired to place numerous charms and protective spells upon the palace. We feel that the culmination of this combination of both divine and arcane magic will be a more suitable defense against the undead than steel. Besides, no being short of a god could breach this throne room now.
Well then, Battle Mage, it looks like you and your new friends have all the angles covered. I guess I'll let you magicians handle all the important stuff, and I'll just get on back to my mundane duties, like a good little soldier.
Captain!
Nothing short of a god, eh? I sincerely hope that Bompador may spare you from being deadly mistaken.
Captain, you've not been excused by His Majesty. Captain! Captain!
Leave him be.
Now, keep in mind that Hasgill had been in the service of the king since he was of age. There was no one else in the kingdom that could have left the king's presence without being excused, except him. While the court gasped in protest, the king just watched him leave. Saddened, no doubt, that he did not confide in his friend sooner.
With all due respect, my liege, that common thug...
He has my complete faith, Angar. As do you and Tejina. Your feelings for him are your own. But I will tolerate no further comments or opinions about his character. We must save all of our rancor for the enemy.
Yes, Your Majesty, as you wish it.
Captain, wait, please.
I'm not used to you being so formal.
I'm sorry, my friend. Sometimes the life of a wizard can be rather ceremonious. I've had nothing but politics on my mind since I've returned from the Imperial Palace.
I'm a warrior. I have no interest in or patience for politics.
That's obvious. Angar's still seething.
I don't really care. He's a pompous ass.
Perhaps, but he's a powerful priest. It's said that he holds Bompadour's favor.
I know that he's powerful and influential, just as you are. But do you honestly believe that the king is sufficiently protected?
If there ever is an attack, the concentration of soldiers here will buy more than enough time for me and the priest to ready a magical counterattack, while still ensuring the king's protection. And make no mistake, I think that aside from the Emperor, he's the safest man in the land. Listen, I realize that you are angry because you were not consulted on this matter. You should have been involved. We thought that you had enough on your mind with the city's defenses, and we did not want to detract your focus.
Wow, you really are a skilled diplomat. I feel my stubbornness fading already. I've never known one so beautiful to be so talented in communication.
And I've never known one so tempestuous to be so delicate in the care of their jewelry. Anytime your thoughts are heavy, you always seem to mind that amulet you wear around your neck.
This is a very special amulet. It has a mysterious past and an auspicious future.
I must say I'm intrigued. Why don't you tell me about it over some lunch at the tavern?
Well, that's the best idea I've heard all day.
There was nary a soul which could temper the fire in the eyes of Hasgill, save perhaps Tegina. It was whispered by many that the relationship between the two blossomed outside of their working environment. As a friend to both, I was probably the only one who knew the truth.
So, may I see the amulet?
Oh, certainly. It's been in my family for generations. It's never actually shown any magical properties, except that it never loses its luster. I've been through dirt, soot, ash, and smoke, yet I've never had to clean or polish it.
Do you know anything at all about its origins?
Well, I know nothing for certain, though it's been said that the rightful heir of my family must always wear it until the day comes when its power is needed. Who knows when that'll be, or exactly how it's to be used. After all, it's been passed on since the beginning of my family line to me.
Well, what a surprise to see you two here. Is this to come after the storm?
Greetings and salutations, Spagan. To what do we owe the honor of your visit, my oldest of friends?
Now why must you tarnish my good name by slandering it with words like honor?
Well, you conceded. So how's Angar?
Well, let's put it this way. If I were you, I wouldn't bother seeking any healing services over at the temple anytime soon.
Angar, hypocritical charlatan.
He can certainly turn up the pomp sometimes. I wonder if Bompadour plugs his ears up.
By the gods!
Set? Oh, not the dreaded amulet again. He's brought that to three different scholars, the head of the Royal Magic School and one very angry enchanter in the merchant district.
Well, he was only angry because you insulted him.
Did you see his prices? Besides, I only suggested that if his price gouging was going to be so blatant, that he might consider moving his shop into the Thieves Guild. What good was he anyway? He couldn't tell us anything at all about that amulet, neither could those others.
Well, I can. This amulet was created by Zabs.
Who?
Zabillion Bibble, known as Zabs to most of his clients. An ancient and skilled enchanter. Many say he's the greatest gnome ever to walk the land.
He's responsible for creating many of the more powerful magic items throughout the Empire.
Yes, but I'm not sure even that statement does him justice.
Yeah, is he still alive?
If he is, he'd be over 1,000 years old. It's certainly possible. He does have the pedigree of immortality. The problem is that he hasn't been heard from in over 200 years.
Can you ascertain any other information from it, Tegina?
There's an inscription above the Maker's Stamp. Unfortunately, it looks to be an old gnomish. That can prove to be a problem since I don't speak it or know anyone who does.
Maybe if I can find this Zabs, I can learn more about the amulet.
He's probably the only one that could decipher it. I know of no other gnomes in the Empire.
At that moment, the court herald had burst through the tavern door, exacerbating the sounds of battle and the horrible screams of the undead. We sprung up from our chairs to meet him halfway across the tavern floor. He was wounded badly.
Oh, I found you all. We are under attack. Walking Dead. They're killing everyone. The king is in danger.
Where are the priests?
They hit the temple first. It's been utterly destroyed. All of them are dead. May Bombador save you.
There's nothing we can do for him. He's dead. We must get into the fight.
And that was Longtail Tavern, The Soul Drinker, Episode 1, produced by Praying Mantis Productions. For more episodes and info, visit prayingmantisproductions.com. You're listening to Midnight Audio Theater on WCBE 90.5 FM Columbus, broadcasting on air and online at wcbe.org. Finally, to round out the night, Campfire Radio Theater brings us a tale of horror and suspense with a story called Demon Eyes.
By the fire, make yourself comfortable. Looking through the borrowed eyeglasses of a killer, a convicted murderer, suddenly the world became clear. Among us moved dark beings with eyes that burned wicked with the fires of hell. And most chilling of all revelations, these creatures were wrapped in a fragile shell of flesh. They walked among us, and many of them were us. You're listening to Campfire Radio Theater, a collection of tales of the bizarre and surreal. Tonight's audio play is a story written by John Ballantyne, Demon Eyes.
For Christ's sake, out of the way, slow ass. Jeez. How did I get myself into this? Stupid cell phone service. I can't get a signal through here.
And now
damn it!
Local news and weather. Convicted death row inmate Wesley Wayne Morrow is scheduled to be executed at 9 p.m. this evening at the Jordan.
Oh God, I'm running out of time.
Morrow admitted guilt in a spree of brutal killings during the 1990s and was convicted in 2001 for the murders in what was called by many an open and shut case. It is not known how many more of Morrow's victims possibly remain unaccounted for. In other news...
Why did Morrow give me those eyeglasses? Why trust them to me and not someone else? And the things I can now see with them? I'll never find out if I can't get there and save him in time. To clarify, I'm an atheist. I don't really believe in such things. At least I didn't believe in them. Not until I came face to face with something that can only be described as a demon. This madness all started the day I met Morrow. See, I work for the FBI, a part of their criminal profiling division. I was sent to the death house in Georgia, where Morrow was awaiting execution, in hopes of extracting information regarding the whereabouts of 14 more bodies, more victims of his murderous rampage over a decade ago. It was here in the waiting area. I was met by Detective Paul Bellamy for the first time.
Well, you must be Agent, I'm sorry.
Special Agent Sarah Gowan, FBI.
Hi there. Sorry about that. Paul Bellamy, Atlanta PD.
So you're the one that brought in Morrow. I've read your report and the book you wrote on his capture.
It's been a lot of time on that case, Agent. So you're here to see the infamous Wesley Wayne Morrow.
Once again, the Wayne Lee Ray conundrum rears its ugly head.
The Wayne Lee what?
Oh, it's just, ever noticed how there seems to be a disproportionate number of violent felons with the names Wayne, Lee, or Ray? John Wayne Gacy, Lee Harvey Oswald, James Earl Ray, and so on.
Never heard that.
It's just a silly theory.
I gotta admit, though, I know why you're here.
Really?
Yeah, you think you're going to get him to dish details on where all those other bodies are hidden, right?
If that were my plan, I couldn't discuss it, Detective Bellamy.
Let me say this. You're wasting your time.
Why is that?
Look, I spent hours with this guy in interrogation over the years. Couldn't crack him. Now, he will admit to all of those murders, all 23 to be exact. Hell, he signed confessions to every one. But beyond the whereabouts of the 9 poor souls we could find, well, he just won't tell us where the rest are.
Why do you suppose that is?
Your guess is as good as mine. Who knows what goes on in the head of a maniac? But if I were to venture, I'd say he hopes there might be some last-minute reprieve.
A stay of execution. You think he's holding back that information because...
Because it's the only card he's got left to play.
Let's see, who's on the roster here? Agent Sarah Gowan.
That's me.
Looks like you're up first. Ever talked to a walking dead man before?
Mr. Morrow, I'm Sarah Gowan. I'm with the FBI.
The FBI, huh?
Yes. Well, I'd like to talk with you about a few things. I'm going to record our conversation, if you don't mind.
Not much I can do to stop you now, is it?
I suppose not, but I'd like to have your cooperation. So, let's get right down to business, shall we? There are some details in your account of the murders that I find puzzling.
Ask away. I mean, this is your last chance to pick my brain, after all.
Mr. Morrow, you signed a confession that you killed 23 people between the years of 1992 to 1999.
Well, let's get one thing straight, Agent. They were no longer people when I killed them.
Yes, you claim these individuals were, to quote, some manner of demonic beings, that they were no longer human. Is that correct?
Look, I've been cursed with this burden for a long time now. I've told this story a million and one times and always the same way. It's crazy. Believe me, I know. Some nights I wake up and wonder if any of it is real to this day. But not a word of it is untrue.
I'm not here to dispute any of your claims, Mr. Morrow. You've been very forthcoming with even the grisliest of details of your crimes. The part I find curious is 14 bodies remain unaccounted for. 14 families will never be able to put closure to the loss of their loved ones. In your statements, you say you are a spiritual man, Mr. Morrow, a follower of the Catholic faith. Time is running out. The state is determined to proceed with this execution. Let me assure you of that. There's not going to be a last-minute call from the governor. In 3 days, you will be injected with a combination of drugs that will kill you, as surely as I sit before you now. The families of your victims deserve to have answers. Why won't you at least grant them that?
The answer to that is very simple, Agent Gowan. If I give up the location of those bodies, you will most definitely have them exhumed for testing and probing. God only knows what else. If those corpses are dug from the ground, then all of this will be for nothing.
What do you mean?
You know, I've often prayed for madness, that I'm just some garden variety nut job. What a relief it would be to awake in some padded room, locked up and howling at my own shadow. Just fill me with drugs and take away this torture, right? But no. There is a keen logic to evil and the creatures that practice its dark art. They are very real. They are listening right now.
How could returning the remains of these victims to their families for proper burial possibly
because
be...
Because the demons that inhabited those rotting cadavers are trapped there in the ground. If you exhume them, they are released to the world free again to plunder and rape and weave their web of wicked indulgences. Agent, do you know how to kill a demon?
Can't say as I do.
Neither do I. I mean, you can't kill something that doesn't live in the first place, at least doesn't live as you and I do. When a demon takes possession of a human body, it sinks roots into the soul like a twisted tree into a rich, fertile ground, and it grows like some malignancy. The bitter truth is, you can't extract it without killing the host in 9 out of 10 cases. Most of that exorcism nonsense you hear, well, it's pure garbage. You can't pull them out of someone unless they want to come out. But if one is willing to take certain measures, extreme, radical measures...
Kill?
Exactly. You take them by surprise before they've had a chance to adapt,
to escape to another body. You can trap them. Trap them in the body. A dead body.
Then what?
There's a number of rituals, but essentially, the remains must be buried. Buried deep and never, never disturbed.
So, how do you know the difference? How do you know when you've got someone with a demon inside them, or you've just run across some poor schmuck having a bad day?
You see these glasses that I wear? Simple, unassuming eyeglasses, wouldn't you agree? Here, take them.
I'd rather not.
Can barely reach them with my hands shackled to this chair, but... There you go.
What am I supposed to do with them?
They're glasses. Put them on. That's good. They suit you.
If you say so.
Allow your eyes to adjust them for a moment. Now, what do you see?
What am I supposed to see, Mr. Morrow?
What color are my eyes?
You're wasting my time.
Humor me, Agent Cowan. This might give you some insight.
Your eyes are blue.
Good. Then that means I'm not one of them.
I'm not so sure. I've known a few blue-eyed devils in my time.
Well, if you had been peering at them through those particular glasses and their eyes burned black, black as hell's heart, then you were wise to steer clear of them.
This is how you decided who lived or died?
Yes.
And where did you get these glasses?
A man I once knew. He told me about the evil all around us.
The man's name?
It doesn't matter. You'll never find him.
I bet I can.
It's not important, Agent Gowan. In the past few years, these creatures have launched a major offensive against humankind. There are armies of them matched against us, poised to strike, and society stands vulnerable, like sheep lined up for the slaughterhouse. They know many don't believe in them. It's to their advantage that you don't.
I see we're not getting anywhere here. Your glasses?
Take them. I won't be needing them much longer.
I don't need them either.
Keep the glasses. They're a morbid conversation piece, if nothing else.
Mr. Morrow, I'll be leaving now.
Wait. There's something else you need to know. One more very important thing.
One would expect a serial killer such as Wesley Wayne Morrow to be profoundly disturbed. And I wasn't disappointed. But I had no idea how deeply rooted his psychosis was. Clearly, Morrow was delusional, paranoid, but there was a neatness and order to his insanity that I had never encountered before. A bizarre coherence, a consistent nature to his account that I have rarely come across in someone so mentally unstable. And the glasses? Another mystery. In none of his files had I recalled him mentioning them before.
Hey, Agent Gowan, what a surprise.
Detective Bellamy, is it? Following me around now?
Not at all, ma'am. This little spot happens to be one of my favorite haunts. Mind if I have a seat?
Help yourself.
Thank you. Miss, would you bring my plate to this table? I'll be dining with this young lady.
Yes, sir, here you go.
Thank you, dear. So, I assume you'll be filing your final report on this case.
I suppose.
I don't guess you had any luck with him, revealing the whereabouts of those missing bodies.
No. He's firmly entrenched in his own delusions.
A pity, but not unexpected.
Wow, that's a lot of hot sauce you're putting on that burrito.
The hotter the better, Agent Gowan.
Are you sure you don't want a glass of something to wash that down with? Maybe I can flag our server.
No, I'm perfectly fine, thank you.
You know, Detective Bellamy, the thing I don't understand is why Morrow didn't plead an insanity defense during his trial. He's clearly deranged.
Certainly his lawyer advised him to do so. Morrow wouldn't have it. The doctors, well, they really didn't know what to make of him. And with a clear admission of guilt in the slayings...
He was sent to death row.
Exactly. The evidence of the case further convicted him. The DNA at the crime scenes, the grisly nature of what Morrow did to those poor people. Even if he hadn't signed the confession, he would have been found guilty.
He has no prior criminal record. Even studied to enter the priesthood at one point.
I stopped trying to make sense of this sort of crime a long time ago, Agent Gowan. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason to his choice of victims. He didn't pursue young co-eds after some perverted sexual obsession or go after weak, sure targets. They came from all walks of life, social backgrounds, ethnic groups. They were men, women, children. Morrow didn't discriminate in any regard whom he killed. But when he did kill, he committed his crimes in all exactly the same perverse, ritualized manner. Do you know what he did?
Can't say as I remember the details.
He always struck by surprise first with some blunt object, rendering his victim unconscious or worse. Certainly it was better for them if they were dead, because Morrow would then slice them open, cut out the heart still beating, and bury it separately from the body, sometimes miles away. Then he would dispose of the body, plant it as deeply in the soil as he could. Almost as if he didn't want to take any chances of it climbing back up through the ground.
Here's your sandwich, miss. Thanks.
I'm sorry, Agent Gowan. I shouldn't have been so graphic.
That's all right. It's just your description.
What about it?
It's a lot more detailed than I recall.
Well, I spent a great deal of time with Morrow. I know more than what was actually documented.
Like the eyeglasses?
The glasses? What eyeglasses?
Ma'am, could you bring me a to-go box for this? I think I'll just take it with me.
Certainly, miss. I'll be right back.
What glasses are you talking about, Agent Gowan?
The eyeglasses that Morrow wears that he claims can discern demons. Did he have them at the time of the murders?
I suppose he did. He always had them as long as I can remember. He told you that they allowed him to see demons?
Yes. I'm guessing that tidbit didn't make it into your book.
These magic glasses. Where are they now, Agent Gowan?
Here you go, ma'am. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. Detective Bellamy, always a pleasure. Excuse me, but I have to be on my way. Enjoy your meal. I couldn't resist leaving Detective Bellamy with that befuddled look on his face. But I had no intention of contributing to his research, nor informing him that the glasses rested now solely in my possession. My investigation soon led me to St. Lawrence Catholic School. I had discovered someone from Morrow's past that might provide some answers, and perhaps knew the mystery man who gave him the glasses. Pardon me, are you Father Rivano?
Yes, how might I help you?
My name is Sarah Gowan, special agent with the FBI. I wonder if I might have a few minutes of your time.
This is about the Wesley Morrow case, I suppose?
I just had a few brief questions concerning your time with Morrow in the seminary. You were classmates at the Catholic Diocese in Kansas City, St. Joseph, correct?
Yes, well, we were both on a path of theological study at that time. Both young men in our early 20s then, nearly 25 years ago now.
And you were friends?
Perhaps we should step into the church here for a little more privacy. You must understand, Agent Gowan, I prefer everyone not know I was once friends with a man who'd become a notorious murderer. People talk, whisper among themselves. None of it's beneficial to my mission.
I understand.
Please, have a seat.
Thank you. Father Rivano, there was a teacher at the seminary that both you and Morrow studied under?
Yes, Father Brookland.
Tell me about him.
Well, he was quite the charismatic figure. An eloquent speaker, brilliant scholar. I dare say his teachings had a profound influence on us all.
What about Morrow? What effect did he have on him?
Oh, Morrow was a particular devotee. Disciple of Brooklyn's, I guess you could say. He was enthralled with some of Father Brooklyn's more radical views of the church and the afterlife.
Really? What distinguished Brooklyn from your other teachers?
Well, for one thing, Father Brooklyn was a practicing exorcist sanctioned by the Vatican, I've been told. He had done this for some time and had many, many tales, frightening stories, really. His personal experiences with evil in such real-world settings probably shaped his views and became part of our curriculum as a result.
Did you agree with his views?
I was open to them.
And Morrow?
Oh, he soaked it up like a sponge.
This Father Brooklyn? He died while you were both still in studies?
Yes, after a brief illness. Morrow, wow, he was just devastated by the loss. dropped out of the seminary a short time later, and I didn't see him again until some years ago, flipped on the news, and there he was.
Father Ravano, are you familiar with these?
Blessed saints in heaven. They look like the ones Father Brooklyn wore. They were a tool he used in his exorcisms. He even claimed to be able to see demons with them. Toward the end of his life, he wore those glasses all the time. Where did you find them?
Morrow gave them to me. So I put these on and... well, good news, Father Ravano. Your eyes look normal.
Agent Gowan, these are things not meant to be toyed with.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to make light of your faith, but you must admit, this is a little bizarre.
There are many sacraments, blessed objects within the church that are not public knowledge, my dear. Things hidden from the eyes of the masses. If the world knew what evil lurked around them, even here in the church, please, remove the glasses.
Why?
Listen, you have to excuse me. I'm sorry, I must make ready for evening prayers.
Of course. Thank you for your time, Father.
Father Ravano. Father Ravano.
Oh, I didn't see you there. Yes, my friend, how might I help you?
That's strange. I could swear. Oh, my God.
Certainly, my son. I will be here until late this evening. Please call on me after 6.
Yes.
Agent Gowan? Agent Gowan, are you all right? You look as pale as a sheet. Here, listen, can I get you
something? That man that was just here, what was wrong with him?
What do you mean? I mean, he comes here to confession at least once a week, but nothing other than...
His eyes. They looked right at me. His eyes. You didn't see them?
Well, yes. It seemed perfectly normal to me.
What kind of things does he confess to you, Father Ravano?
You know I can't reveal that.
That man has done something terrible, hasn't he? Something monstrous, and you can't reveal it.
Agent Gowan, there are things you are not meant to see. Please get rid of those glasses for your own sake. They're cursed. Morrow's proof of it. Good day to you.
Father Ravana was right, but I couldn't bring myself to put them away. Would you? If you could see evil through a pair of glasses. I began to see the demons everywhere. At the corner filling station, waiting in line at the bank, at the grocery. They could be your neighbor, your mailman, even your family. I could feel their eyes on me, even in my sleep. Craving answers, I began to listen to the recorded interview I made with Marl, hoping to make some sense of this insanity.
There's something else you need to know. One more very important thing. The police recovered 9 bodies from 10 separate burial sites.
Right. One of the sites was empty. You moved one of the bodies to another site at some point.
No, Agent Gowan. I never moved any of the bodies. I would never have touched it again after burial.
So what happened?
I fear one of them came back. I think one of those godless things pushed the earth away. Climbed from that hole. I don't understand how or why. Maybe he was more powerful than the others.
Don't be ridiculous. That's impossible.
These are demons we are speaking of. They're not bound by our rules or constraints. This one knew me, knew my face. He's the one that finally tracked me down.
Detective Bellamy is the one who tracked you down.
Yes, he is, Agent. You wanted to know where one of the missing bodies was. Well... he's waiting on the other side of that wall.
Bellamy? He may not be an angel, but he's certainly no demon.
Look at him through those cursed lenses, Agent Gowan. Look into his black eyes and tell me again he's not.
Bellamy. He was after the glasses. I had to stop the execution. Morrow held all the answers. He was the only one that did. But now, it was almost too late.
Stop.
stupid cell phone service. I can't get a signal through here. Damn it!
And now for your local news and weather. Convicted death row inmate Wesley Wayne Morrow is scheduled to be executed at 9 p.m. this
evening. God, I'm running out of time. So here I am, full of fear, breaking 101 traffic laws to reach Wesley Wayne Morrow before his time runs out. Before... I'm dazed, hardly conscious as the figure from the other car that's just smashed into me approaches. I can barely make out his face before I pass out.
Take it easy there, Agent Cowan. You've got a nasty bump on the head.
Bellamy? You crashed into me? What the hell do you want?
Right here. Wouldn't want these to fall into the wrong hands again.
I knew it. The glasses.
Why, yes. And I had to prevent you from doing something very foolhardy.
Oh, God, the execution. I've got to stop it.
Too late, dear girl. Justice is served. Morrow was dead 2 hours ago. Deader than all the sons of Abraham, I dare say.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, don't bother reaching for your firearm. I'll keep it safe right here.
Where have you taken me?
A nice little rustic spot in the forest that I became acquainted with. Romantic, isn't it?
This is where they found the bodies.
I thought I might put you here. It's the 10th grave, the one they found empty.
I'm a federal agent, Bellamy. They won't let this slide.
Oh, I have friends everywhere. Some in your agency, even. Yes, you've seen my friends through these glasses, haven't you?
I guess you've got this all figured out.
Only there's one slight complication.
What's that?
I don't think I can kill you now.
What kind of twisted game are you playing?
You know, it was nearly 15 years ago. 15 years. The night I clawed through this black soil, pulled myself from this very hole, my beating heart was calling me. It was no convenient hike either, Miss Gowan. No. Morrow didn't make it easy for me. I staggered miles to find it, dug through the ground, shoved it back into the gaping slit in my chest. Look at the scar I bear under this shirt, even now, you see? Ever attempt self-open heart surgery?
Morrow said you were a demon all along.
Demon. The word has such a negative connotation these days.
What about the others?
I was the only one of Morrow's victims to escape this fate. Or so I thought.
What do you mean?
How far back do you remember?
What does that have to do with anything?
Do you recall your youth? Your childhood? Your parents?
What difference does it make?
Your parents? You don't remember them? Their names?
Strange. That I can't recall. I can't even see their faces.
There was once a family that lived in a little farmhouse over in the next county. A man and his wife. Two kids, one of them a girl of about 12, I guess.
Why are you telling me this?
You were only a girl when he murdered you, Sarah. That's why you don't remember. You were one of Morrow's early victims, one of those 14 bodies they never found.
What are you saying?
Morrow saw the darkness growing in you with those damnable glasses. He could not let you live. Murdered your entire family on that night. Your parents, your little brother.
You're lying. You drugged me with something to dull my senses, to confuse me.
You clawed yourself from that grave just as I did. Awoke to the sound of your throbbing heart and rose from the ground. The innate beast within you forged ahead to find that most crucial organ. You've never wondered the origin of your scar? The deep wound Morrow inflicted on you? Didn't recognize Morrow when you sat face to face with him, with your assassin.
If I was one of you, why did he give me the glasses?
His vision deteriorated rapidly in prison. Morrow was nearly blind. The delicious irony of it all.
No, this is all a lie.
Come now, dear. You know it's not. You've lived in a fog, forgotten who you are, what you truly are under that veil of human flesh. Walk freely now into the darkness. There is nothing to fear when you walk with the unholy. Take my hand.
How can this be?
Take my hand,
Sarah. If I come with you, will I become evil?
What is evil? You don't believe in this sort of thing, do you?
Will I become evil?
Oh, there are plans for you, my dear. Most assuredly, wicked plans.
Actually, Detective, I've got some wicked plans of my own.
Dear girl, whatever is it you're hiding in that other hand?
Always strike first with some blunt object. Like a rock you've concealed behind your back. Isn't that how you said Morrow did it? Oh, but I see you're not unconscious yet, are you? Sorry, Detective Bellamy. I didn't mean to spill your brains all over the ground. I'll take those glasses, though. Now what, Bellamy? Oh, yes. I should cut out that heart of yours. That's the next step in this ritual, isn't it? Of course, that didn't work out too well the last time. After all, you didn't stay buried, did you? Those black eyes still staring back at me? What would happen if I plucked them right out of your head? Burned them? Would you still find your way from this hole? Perhaps I'll lay you face down in this ground, let you dig yourself deeper and deeper. Well, let's get to work. There's one. And the other. Perhaps Bellamy was right. Maybe I was one of them and I just couldn't remember, or maybe I had just descended into madness. I felt like I had awoke from a dream just on the edge of consciousness, hazy and unclear. As I would stare at my reflection, my own eyes were reflected back at me. I was okay. Could that darkness within me have fled? I can never know for sure. I must be forever vigilant, watchful, as we all should. Even now I wear the glasses, for still I fear that one morning I might rise and find the eyes staring at me through the mirror are not mine, but those of a demon.
You've been listening to Campfire Radio Theater. Tonight's tale, Demon Eyes, was written, directed, and produced by John Ballantyne. Featured in the cast were Diane Gilbert as Sarah Gowan, Alan Pierce as Detective Bellamy, John Ballantyne as Wesley Wayne Morrow, Blaine Hicklin as Father Ravano. Also featured were Teresa Ballantyne and Jeffrey Lester. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Sound design by Tim Holding and John Ballantyne. Additional sound provided by Free Sound Project. Mixing and post-production by John Ballantyne.
You just heard Demon Eyes, produced by Campfire Radio Theater. For more information and future episodes, visit their Facebook page under Campfire Radio Theater. You've been listening to Midnight Audio Theater on WCBE 90.5 FM, Central Ohio's NPR station. That's it for tonight. We hope you enjoyed hearing these new audio dramas and perhaps even piqued your interest in hearing more of them online. And not to worry, next week we'll be back to Byron and Twin Stars. So until then, audio drama fans, same bat time, same bat channel. I'm Kathy Ranella. Thanks for tuning in. BBC World News is up next.